Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. The football mad state of Texas didn't always look the way it does now, with the Dallas Cowboys, America's team, playing in a super stadium, and the Houston Texans a legitimate force of their own. Before football became the country's most popular sport, a process hastened by wise television deals and the inception of the Super Bowl, college football remained king in Texas. But thanks to an influx of oil money, the original Texans, today's Kansas City Chiefs, and the Cowboys underwent a blood feud for Dallas's hearts, minds, and money. And though they lasted just 3 years in Dallas, their influence together in raising the city's football profile is still felt today. John Eisenberg is the author of 10 Gallon War, the NFL's Cowboys, the AFL's Texans, and the feud for Dallas's pro football future. And it's a pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
How much did the landscape of football in the 1960s in Dallas and in other cities shape the way we see the game today?
Well, it had a huge impact. You can draw a straight line pretty much from what happened in Dallas in the early 60s to where we are today. Back then, they certainly couldn't envision what's going on today, but without a doubt, the AFL-NFL war that unfolded there in those 3 years eventually led to the merger between the AFL and NFL in the mid to late 60s, which, of course, is this single event that created the modern NFL as we know it. And Dallas was ground zero of that war between those two leagues. In the end, the people in Dallas were the ones that basically hammered out that merger. They were the ones that had felt the war most keenly, and they were the ones that hammered out the merger. So it's a key moment in NFL history.
Much has been said about the way the league came together and how much enmity there really was between the two leagues in certain cities. How soon did they realize in Dallas that with joined forces they might be able to accomplish more than fighting each other tooth and nail?
Took a long time because there was 7 years of just out-and-out war, and salary skyrocketed, and the problem was the NFL thought the AFL would go away, really, is what happened. The NFL was the lordly established league, and they, from the beginning in 1960, felt like, well, maybe we can kill off this league. And really, in Dallas is where they tried to do it. The story of the AFL is that Lamar Hunt, son of a Texas oil man and one of the richest men in America, he wanted into the, he was 28 years old, just a few years out of SMU, and he wanted a team. He loved football, and he wanted a team in Dallas, an NFL team. And the NFL basically patted him on the head like a dog and told him to go away, and he could not get into the league. So, classic Texas oil man moment, if you won't give me my team, I'm going to start my own league. So that is what he did. So that created the second league, and the NFL tried to put them out of business by killing off Lamar's team in Dallas with the Cowboys. That's an expansion. They were hatched as an expansion team specifically to kill off the Texans, which they failed to do. So the NFL, I think, thought all along, well, we'll kill Lamar's team. Maybe we'll kill this AFL. Took them 4 or 5 years to realize this is not going to happen. The AFL is going to make it. They're going to be here, and we'll have to deal with them. So then a couple more years after that, they basically threw up their hands and said, we'll agree to merge with you and work together instead of against each other.
As I mentioned at the outset, the NFL in that era was not what it is today, so I wondered, why did Hunt and all of his partners, who largely came from oil money, have such interest in getting involved in a sputtering pro league? I mean, was it, you know, rich guys who had a lot of money to play with and wanted to have a team, or did they actually sense an opportunity to build what we see today?
Oh, they definitely sensed the opportunity. The story is this. In 1958, pro football was just starting to take off. And, of course, that seminal moment is that overtime championship game between the Colts and the Giants. 40 million people watched it. Johnny Unitas led the Colts to a dramatic victory. And it was the moment when pro football sort of it had been around for almost four decades, but it had lagged in the shadows of college football, Major League Baseball, and it was a third-tier, second-tier sport. And so after that game, I think intuitive people, shrewd people saw that boy, this sport is taking off. 40 million people watched it. And there were all these cities without teams. And they wanted in. They wanted to play in this league. And there were only 12 NFL teams in 1959. And two were in Chicago. So there were a lot of cities without teams. And Lamar was the one that sort of realized, as he was trying to get into the NFL, he kept coming across these other people that were in the same boat. Bud Adams from Houston. And there were people from New Orleans, Atlanta, Denver, San Diego, Boston. He just went round and round and realized there's all these cities with sports-loving would-be owners who didn't have teams. And so he realized, golly, all these guys, we could have our own league. There's enough to go around. And so he just basically put together a group of a lot of guys that felt like he did, that pro football is getting ready to take off. And if we start our own league, it may make it.
You're right that there were certainly moments of adversity. They had shared facilities and were often giving away tickets to games and couldn't get anyone to come. So what were some of the challenges involved in launching not one but two franchises in the same city?
In Dallas in 1960, the problems were many. The first and foremost problem was it was college football country. Long history of college football there, the Southern Methodist University in Dallas, University of Texas, Texas A&M, TCU, on and on, colleges with great history going back decades at that point. And it was entrenched as a college football area. And number two was probably high school football. That's the real roots of football in Texas is college and high school football. The pros, they just weren't that into, and I would be remiss if I didn't also mention that there was a racial aspect to it. The Southwest Conference was segregated still at that point with all white teams. These professional football had African American players in it, and Dallas, maybe in 1960, sad but true that there was a segment of the population that bothered them. They didn't want to pay money to go see African American players. So between that and the college football history, it just wasn't, and plus pro sports then just wasn't sort of the massive enterprise that it is today. And so there just weren't that many people willing to plunk down their money to go see these teams play, especially when the games were on TV. So drawing crowds and stirring interest as a result, they were really starting from scratch. And in the early years, the crowds were horrible, and they were basically giving away tickets. The Dallas Cowboys, the stadium was less than half full for the first game in their history.
So then, when did they become America's team? It's amazing to read your book and realize the roots they come from and the way they're perceived today. It couldn't be more stark.
Yes, well, what happened? Well, first and foremost, they had to get the Texans had to leave. They couldn't share. The town was, it's like a Western. The town was not big enough for the both of them. and so the Texans ultimately, not to give away the ending here, but they did leave and left Dallas to the Cowboys. So the Cowboys then were on their own, and they're all along, it was a long-range vision. If they always thought, well, if we're the NFL, if we put a winning team on the field, the people will come. And they were correct in the end with that. By the late 60s, really, they had a winning team on the field with Tom Landry, Don Meredith, Bob Hayes, some of these iconic names in football history, and they were unable to get over the top until the early 70s and win a Super Bowl once they had Roger Staubach there. But they became very popular. They were seen sort of as a cutting-edge team. They had shiny uniforms, and they played a fancy offense. And they moved into Texas Stadium, which was a stadium with a hole in the roof. And there was all this stuff going on. They were glamorous. And so by the late 70s, they were always on national TV and very popular, getting to be, as a result, popular around the country. And that's where the America's Team nickname came in. And actually, they didn't think it up. America's Team nickname came from NFL Films. Used to do an annual year in review for each team. I think they still do that, actually. And the 1978 one, the Cowboys, the NFL Films looked at them and said, God, they're America's team. Wherever they go, people are cheering for them. There's always fans in the stands cheering for the Cowboys on the road. So they came up with the America's Team nickname, and it stuck.
Your book starts and ends in the modern day, looking back when there's been opportunity for the franchises that you write about now in their current iterations to play each other, and then having the Super Bowl played in Dallas in 2011. How much, when you were doing this book, did you realize how little people involved in the game and fans around the game understood about the roots of the NFL and the roots of these teams in specific?
Well, I definitely knew that there's definitely a disconnect there. A lot of people do not know this story, which is kind of amazing, but that's the way it is. You know, there's only so much interest in history, so I felt that there was a story to tell that as a result, because it could not be more stark to think about professional football starting in Dallas in 1960 and two teams having basically practically pay people to come to their games. No one's coming. And then a half century later, the Super Bowl is there, a worldwide global audience, and they're playing in this crazy Taj Mahal of a stadium that the Cowboys have built out in the suburbs with 100,000 people there. And it's just so different that no one can imagine what it was like back in the beginning. It seems like another planet almost. So that's why I like writing about that era. I wrote a book about the Vince Lombardi in Green Bay in the late 50s before he was a title town. It was Title Town USA, because that it's really the coming of age moment era, I would say, of pro football, and it's fun to write about because the decisions that were made then, helped create what is the NFL today, and it's fun to see where we came from.
We've been speaking with John Eisenberg, the author of 10-Gallon War, the NFL's Cowboys, the AFL's Texans, and the feud for Dallas's pro football future. John, thank you so much for your time, and I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.